Hey guys, it's Danny. Just a quick reminder before we get started. I'm not a doctor. I'm just a guy who's lived with anxiety and depression, and I want to provide a platform for others to have that conversation so we can break the stigma together. If you are having mental health issues, please call a medical professional. And if you are in crisis, please call 988, is the suicide prevention hotline. Music is wonderful. In some of my most difficult times, I use music to get me through and kind of gain focus. So I'm super excited about my guests today. I have Kathleen and Brandon, and they are board certified music therapists. We dive into things like musical theory, and it's a wonderful, wonderful conversation. So let's dive in. All right, everyone, we're back with another episode of Mental Health Role Models. This week, we are going to talk a little bit about music therapy, which I'm really excited about. I have Kathleen Sell and Brandon Benguish.
Yep.
Yes, nailed it. All right.
That's right.
So thanks for coming on, guys. We have a mutual connection and she hooked us up, which is awesome because I think that we have a lot of cool intersections that we can talk about today. So Kathleen, let's talk a little about music therapy with you first. You work with the general population and as well as kids. So tell me kind of a little bit about like strategies and stuff and what you're aiming for with music therapy.
Sure. So I run music therapy sessions in a couple of different ways. So I work a few days a week at a community music school just outside of Boston. So the primary demographic that I see there are children, but I also have a couple of teenage clients and a couple of adult clients. And then I also have my own business as well. And in my business practice, I try to have it be as open-ended and as welcoming as possible. So I can work with, all clients of varying needs within my own scope of practice. So I tend to see a lot of kids with autism spectrum disorder that has sort of become my niche, but especially since the start of the pandemic, I've seen a huge increase in teens with mental health disorders. So that's starting to pop up all over the place. And so now I'm starting to see a lot more of that coming into play.
See, and I think what's interesting about music therapy to me is something that I've always done is when I'm having a moment of anxiety is I put my headphones on and I find something interesting to listen to. Is that something you turned to and when you have like kind of an anxious moment and that kind of created that road to get you into music therapy?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of my first experiences with anxiety personally were way back in high school. And one of the accommodations that I actually had written into my 504 plan were that I could listen to music to sort of block out the noise in my head while I was taking exams. So I could actually have my iPod out when everybody else had to put theirs away. And I was allowed to have music playing. So it sort of helped me focus. It kind of helped ground me back to time and place. And that was sort of my first exposure to using music for basically a non-musical goal. And that's something that I've advocated for my clients as an accessible tool to help them ground themselves. It's a way that they can bring music into their own lives and help quiet the noise in their own heads in their everyday life. It doesn't have to be something that they do with me. It's something that they can do on their own and feel empowered to, turn on their Spotify and be able to work through a moment where they feel anxious or where they feel depressed and be able to work through those feelings themselves too.
See, that's so interesting. Cause like, that it's interesting that kind of the iPod has become a tool in that way, shape or form is Like, because for me, I would had to literally take out like a CD player, open it up, pop a CD in, and just kind of like the accessibility of music in that terms. So, Brandon, let's talk about kind of your career. So, how did you kind of get into that world? Is it a similar route as Kathleen, or is it kind of different?
I feel like doing that now, I kind of fell into it. I started off by, I knew I wanted to study music. So I studied music education, and then I didn't want to be a teacher. So I found music therapy. So I did that. And then I think I got particularly interested in mental health. Fast forward a bit, I ended up working in inpatient psych for a couple of years. And then this is just kind of what I happened to find, to be honest. I don't have a particular connection to substance abuse, but now I mean, now I'm very interested in it. I do some music therapy now there, and a lot of individual just talk therapy. And I think that music, I mean, music can be a great release for people. It's a great coping skill for people.
So when you engage somebody in that setting, what are kind of your targets? Is it to kind of relax and engage, or is it typically you're working with somebody who really just is impacted by music in that way, shape, or form?
I think when I use music, and it can obviously be used in many different ways, my approach to it has always been sort of as teaching you how it's something you can use on your own. As in like a resource you can use on your own, whether it is for any of those things you said. I mean, whether it is a way to relax, whether it is a way to express yourself, I think it's I try and just teach people the ways in which they can utilize it. 'Cause I think ultimately in any type of setting, I mean, it depends. I think more with Kaplan does is more long term, but anything else, if I'm just meeting someone in for a short amount of time, they're not going to be with me forever, and they're going to have to learn things to do on their own. So, yeah, I like to kind of help people unlock things that they could do.
Right, like take out their iPod when they need it is
Yeah, for sure.
so Kathleen, let's before we talked about kind of your inroads to getting into music therapy. You did reveal to me that you have general anxiety. Is that something that kind of led to where you are?
It's actually interesting. So I was only diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder in 2020. So I became a music therapist in 2018. And I think we all had some mental health struggles in 2020. And so mine
Absolutely.
hit a pretty low in 2020 as well. And it was then that I started really seeking out more resources to try and so whether that was an interview situation, sometimes I would feel anxious going into an interview.
Sorry in advance for that.
See, this is casual. See, this is fun. But like a job interview, my
Right.
palms would be sweating. I would like it would be a rough situation. So it ended up shifting over time where I just felt like the anxiety was coming around and hitting me more and more, and that I started seeing that spike in 2020. And so that was when the generalized anxiety disorder actual diagnosis came about. And then actually within the last month or so, I was diagnosed with panic attacks. So that was like a panic attack disorder. So that's been sort of my new mental health journey. So that didn't actually lead me to music therapy, but I am using a lot of music in my own coping skills within that journey.
I love that, and I think, like you said, you're kind of not alone. Like my son has the pandemic kind of blew up a whole lot of emotions and things like that. So I think that's you're not alone in the fact that the pandemic kind of threw everything off. You guys are in kind of a cool situation that you both use music in your careers. Do you ever come home and like kind of collaborate on what you're gonna do and how you're going to strategize for a like particular situation?
That's really funny because I don't really like to talk about it. Like, I mean, I'm fine talking about it now. I don't know. I like to think I have pretty good boundaries with myself, or with my professional life. So I'm pretty much able to just kind of flip it off. I think good or bad, I don't know if that's good or bad. It remains to be seen, but
yeah, I think the answer is yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. Thank you. Thank you.
He is very good at coming home and leaving work at work. Whereas I come home and all I do is talk about work, and I go out with friends and all I do is talk about work. And it's a testament to like how much I love my job, but also, you know, like not being able to set my own boundaries, that, you know, all I think about is work sometimes. And so there are definitely times where I'll come home and I'm telling Brandon, you know, I have a client and I'm really trying to figure out this one type of
compartmentalizing work and life, because I feel like I live in a world that it's all kind of combined. So like, I am so jealous that you're able to compartmentalize like that, Brandon. Kathleen, I work at UMass Memorial. So I get to see kind of, I've seen the music therapy side of it. So I get to kind of see that side. What's your favorite part? Like, what's your favorite part about like working with that general population and kind of being able to interact with people inside your platform?
My favorite part is when they realize they've reached their goals, is when, or they've really made progress in one of their goals. So I'll have moments when my kids or my clients will reflect back on where they were when they started, especially, you know, the ones that I'm seeing for mental health needs. They'll reflect back on where they were when they started and say, whoa, I really have come a really long way. And that reflection in and of itself can be a really pivotal moment for them. And then we get to go into music and have this sort of like joyous moment where, you know, now they feel like they want to celebrate their progress. And it's like the entire tone of their session has changed from there. Those are some of my favorite moments. And you see them, I see it with all different diagnosis, and it looks a little bit different for each type of client. So it'll look a little different for clients with autism, where they may not always recognize what goals we're working on, but they'll have a moment where they realize, oh, like I just said something cool, didn't I? And so it looks a little bit different each time, but those are my favorite moments when my clients are able to stop and realize they have made progress.
Do you ever see like patterns in terms of like the different kind of music they're responding to?
A lot of times with music therapy, we always want to go towards their preferred music, because that's always going to be what people respond to best. So in terms of patterns, it's kind of cool to see the different musical phases that my clients will go through. So if you think back to what kind of music you might have been listening to at 13, that's what I'm watching my clients go through. And that's what they're using in their sessions to work through anxiety or work through depression or work through really difficult situations that they're navigating in their personal life. And they have this music that really speaks to them and really they're really attached to. And I'm watching them go through these really crucial musical phases in their life.
You made me think of something. And I think what you're asking is kind of like a common question, what I'm hearing. And I think scientifically and research based, the answer is no. Like there is no type of music that is beneficial to anyone. Mm. I could be wrong. I don't know. People will disagree with me. This is my opinion. Mm. I think it's like colors, like is like red an angry color? Like, yeah, but that's a cultural thing. Is blue saw, you know, blue calming? Yeah, but it's a cultural thing, right? So like in even if you look at colors, like what is green, what is red, what is blue, that is a cultural thing. We've determined based on like the RGB thing, like whatever that exact number is blue. So other countries and other cultures have different meanings of colors, have different colors than us. Same with music. So other countries in the world, for example, like I know in Finland, like a lot of the music, I don't know why it's coming to me, but a lot of the music is like a little like darker, like sadder, quote unquote. So I think to get a little more into it, it kind of boils down to this concept of consonants and dissonance. Mm. It's like two sounds that their frequencies are closer together and kind of fighting with each other is more dissonant, like minor sounds, which we kind of associate with something sad. And then consonant are like clearer sounds, like major sounds. So I think we in North America, at least, we have that kind of Western thinking of this is happy, this is sad. And if we flip to somewhere, I don't know, I'll go to another country, India, their music system is completely different. So I don't know too much about it, but I just know that the tonality of the music is different. So that's all I'm saying is there isn't a scientifically one type of music. Mm-hmm. That being said, you know, certain music is more popular than other music. I mean, it's not completely random, obviously, but I think it's based in culture. So I think if someone grew up, you know, on the moon, they're not gonna know that "Don't Worry, Be Happy" or something like that is like fun and happy. They wouldn't know. But we build associations with things like anything else. I don't know. Does that make sense?
I love that like absolutely okay. Just blew my mind.
Oh, good. Yeah, I mean, it was a really big revelation I definitely had in my education. Even the thing about notes or scales, like that is from a logical perspective, a C major scale doesn't mean anything. It's just a contrived Western thing we invented. That being said, I mean, here's a question for you. You know, if you were feeling sad, would you want to listen to something really sad or something happy? What do you think?
Oh, I instantly go to my Linkin Park albums and like, okay, and things like that. Like some, for me, a lot of when I turn to music, it's the lyrics. It's kind of the mm-hmm. feel, the tone. Like when I feel like when I'm in an episode of like depression, anxiety, I turn to something that's more fast paced, something that's a little more angry, kind of go back to kind of the stuff that I felt when I was in my lowest points.
So that kind of goes with what I'm saying. I mean, you built an association, and culturally, like, we know Linkin Park is like probably darker. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah,
I think they're a good band. I'm not really a fan, but I just in my head, I think they're like darker, right? Like a bit like, right. So that being said, music can represent how you're feeling. And the reason I asked that question is because it's kind of like, if we kind of draw this out into a bigger context, if you're feeling sad, do you go up to your friend, do you want them to be like, come on, don't be sad? You might, no, probably not. Most likely not, maybe, but probably not. You'd want them to kind of be sad with you, probably, and experience how you feel. So I think, at least how you're describing it for you, that's how you would use music. And I think that's how probably the majority of human beings, I mean, in Western society, at least, use music, like a lot, is to help them feel how they're feeling. This is from a mental health perspective, which is just one piece of the pie.
See, I love that. And it's funny that you kind of like dove into that kind of angle of it. Do you guys ever mm-hmm. do you have like very different views of, I mean, you said you kind of leave work at home, leave work at work, leave life at home, but like, do you kind of have a different view of it because you had that musical background and you got your degree, where you got your degree in music and things like that? Do you have different kind of views sometimes in terms of like things like that?
I don't know what you think really, but
I'm almost interpreting the question as like, do we have different philosophies of music therapy? Because that's a common question. It's kind of a common question. Yeah. Is like, do we perceive what we do to be similar.
Yeah,
I mean, I think it's tricky. It's like one thing you must examine in any type of profession where you're trying to help someone is like, what is your theoretical framework? So in what framework do you base, from a theory perspective, do you base what you're doing on? So like, and I think that could apply to any field, really. Like, what drives you to do what you do? You know, you learn something in school or by reading it, and then that is the basis of what you do.
So what's your theoretical framework?
I think for me, it's more so, it's what I was saying before, is like teaching people things they can do on their own. Is that they are capable of doing anything. They just need some guidance. I don't know. That's like, it depends on the person. That's my theoretical framework. And I think for the vast majority of music therapists, they would probably say that it depends on the person. Wouldn't you agree?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of call that client-centered.
Yeah, so that's clients. Like, that's exactly what I'm describing. Yeah.
Which I think
100%. So, I just want to use some lingo.
You can use lingo.
Use all the lingo, man.
We have the certifications. We're allowed to use the lingo.
No, I just meant in terms of being accessible. So yeah.
Well, then you can explain what it means. That's so
true. Well, I mean, and it's funny because like I said, I was talking about how like I go to the Children's Medical Center. There's one kind of moment that gets caught in my mind every single time I talk about music therapy is they were singing part of your world but from The Little Mermaid, and it inspired this little girl to stand up and walk with her. And I feel like stuff like that is just so powerful that it's kind of hypnotizing in a way. Like,
yeah,
I just think it's just so intriguing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you're talking about it from a perspective of children, I think music is definitely used as like a motivation and a reward for people. Mm-hmm. To like, one supervisor said to me, like, doing music therapy is the only thing that a child's not like kicking and screaming on the street that they don't want to go in. It's like the one thing they want to do. Mm-hmm. And then actually like complete some type of task or some type of goal.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like you're completing, we call them non-musical goals, but you're kind of sneaky also completing, like you're sneaking them into all of the fun things that you're doing with
music. You're putting them in a different comfort zone. Like, you're finding that comfort zone and you're putting them in it so that they can adjust.
Yeah. A common definition of music therapy is, music therapy is used to complete or reach goals that are unrelated to music, which actually, in my opinion, is wrong, because you could still have a musical goal. Hypothetically, absolutely. If someone was shy about singing again and they wanted to sing in front of people again, that could be a goal. Why not? So I think kind of the what kind of makes something, you didn't ask this, but I'm going to say it, like what makes something into a therapy is that there's a goal, there's some point to it. So like, if someone enjoyed music, that's fine, but that's not really a therapy. Mm-hmm. And you're not saying that, I'm just saying that I feel like that's like, if you put on YouTube music therapy, it'd be like random videos. It'd be like a video of like the beach and like background music. It might be, I don't know, I don't Google it.
Now I'm gonna Google it.
Tell me what's there.
If you look on YouTube and put music therapy in, it has gotten better. And a lot of the things that will pop up are the different modalities posting, like their specific videos to promote, you know, there's neurologic music therapy. They'll post videos to sort of talk about that specific type of training. Nordoff Robbins is posting. And
I just Googled it. It's all books.
Okay.
It's all
that,
books.
Yeah, that's also good. Makes sense.
Books that's about music therapy and music theory.
That's
not okay. Bad. Yeah. So,
and I think sort of tagging on to what Brandon was saying is, I also still use the definition that music therapy. That's sort of your
that's
your
the
like
easiest way to explain it.
Your one line elevator pitch is using music to achieve a non-musical goal. But I agree that sometimes the goal is musical, because I also think you're achieving non-musical things in doing that. Because in learning an instrument or in finding your voice again, you're actually accomplishing a lot of non-musical goals anyway, which goes back to like learning an instrument in school can help kids gain self-confidence and self-esteem and build social skills and connection and learn communication. So you're working on all of those non-musical things in learning music to begin with. So even if our goal is, you know, working on music, sort of all of these other things that we are actually working on in the process of learning ukulele is also happen. They're also happening.
I think my gripe with how people's attitudes towards music, but also towards the arts in general. So this is a greater societal problem. So if we think about, you know, music, and I'll expand it to arts and drama in schools, people are like, oh, music helps with math. It helps you learn a skill. It helps you learn how to concentrate. People always focus on the benefits of music and the arts because it helps you with other things. But people don't say it's just good to know. No one questions we need math, but people question, well, why do they need to know that? And people defend it by saying, oh, it helps them with math. But why not learning art for the sake of art? And I mean, that's a greater discussion. Like the point of art, like, why do we have art in the world? You know, and,
to express feelings.
Yeah, that's the yeah. So like,
which is a non-musical goal.
And you know, if we didn't have art in the world, I mean, the world would be boring. That would be one huge facet of life that would make it not worth living. Really, I mean, we need art and music. I mean, that extends to everything. Everywhere is art. Everywhere in the world.
Well, I mean, and you can view virtually everything in a form of art. Like,
yeah, definitely.
I worked in a place that they did wiring for like control panels for fire systems. Art, like it, I'll send you a picture later. It's beautiful. Like, but I think that's such a cool way to view it. So kind of last question, if you knew somebody up and coming, and they wanted to kind of get into the music therapy and that industry, what would be your first suggestion to them?
Like to work as it?
Yes.
You answer first and then I'll answer.
Okay, this is the first thing I would say. The first thing you should do is go volunteer and actually like observe it. If you do not, I'm not going to name names, but I've seen people in my career or in school and stuff. And if you're listening to this, I don't care, that never observed it. You have to at least watch it or something. Find a hospital, nursing home, whatever that has volunteers. Actually spend some time with a music therapist, talk to them, watch them in action. Do that first. And if I think like any field, but especially this field, people will be willing to help you. I would say start by doing that. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, you're really fired up about that.
That's what I did.
Get ready for the next podcast solely on that topic.
Yeah,
I am so ready.
I think you should not be doing, you should not be trying to help people if you don't at least like see what it's like.
Sure.
Well, and I feel like that's for so many industries too. Like,
definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, for my industry, for my previous industry. So I was in sports before. But like it's you gotta just write. You just have to be like kind of in the flow of a game. Like go to cover baseball for free for $5 a game.
There you go. Yeah, you have to like try and do, like, you know, it'd be like if I wanted to go write a if I wanted to write about sports and like I never like went to a game, it'd be like, well, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. Like go check it out first. See if you really want to do it.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking forward to Kathleen's answer.
Yeah.
My answer is actually much shorter. I would say evaluate what your why is and evaluate what, and that kind of piggybacks off of what Brandon was saying anyway. Evaluate what your intention in going into the field is in the first place. And one of the things that makes me kind of sad is that some people think that music therapy is a good backup if they don't want to perform and don't think they can make money performing.
Terrible backup.
And it's, you can't go into a therapeutic field if your heart is not in it. And, you know, music therapy has to, it's gotta be the thing you want to do. If you want to perform, go perform. But if music therapy is what you want to do, do that. Don't have it be the backup because, you know, something else you wanted to do didn't work.
It's a good point.
I encourage.
It's not a good backup field. It's really not.
So, well, guys, I really appreciate it. Thank you, and keep doing what you're doing, because you are making a huge impact on what you do. A big thank you to Kathleen and Brandon for coming on. I think it was a really cool conversation, and it only solidifies the importance of music, especially in like a therapeutic way. I think it's mind blowing what the brain can do, and with a little bit of help. I didn't mention it in the conversation because I completely forgot about it, of course. I used to work at a retirement community many years ago, and one of the residents actually couldn't speak. They could only say the same like three words, and it was really heartbreaking to see this person kind of struggle with communicating. But again, the amazing way a brain works is this resident could sing, and it was really amazing because it was when they were struggling to find their words, I'd say, sing it to me, and they'd be able to sing it. And it's just, it's amazing what music can do. And it's really, it's such a cool medium, and it has so many purposes. So as I said at the end, like what they're doing for work is amazing. And I think it's the coolest thing ever. So anyway, a little bit of housekeeping before we log off. Give me a follow on Twitter and Instagram at DQ4U. Subscribe. Send me a rating. Send me suggestions for people you want me to reach out to. I love this, guys. I love what we're doing. I love having these conversations. And so let's keep rolling, right? Definitely reach out. And let's keep talking, because that's the only way that we're going to break this stigma together.